Moncrief on News Talk.
Tomorrow, as of course we all know, we will be celebrating our National Saint Day. Or are we? According to Dr. Chris Doyle from the University of Galway, there may have actually been not one, but two Saint Patricks, with the two becoming merged into one person over time. Chris, good afternoon.
John, how are you?
Not too bad. So run us through what kind of documentary evidence there are about the possibility of there being two St. Patricks.
Okay. So the official story of St. Patrick has been handed down to us is that, you know, he gives it to himself, that ourselves, that he had, in his own writing, that he had been taken as a slave to Ireland, spent 6 years somewhere in Ireland, escaped with divine help and possibly to Britain, possibly to France. And years later was inspired by the calls of the Irish in his dreams and, you know, by God speaking to him, etc., to come back to Ireland and bring the Christian faith. And that's kind of the story we have, you know, to the present time. But up until about the 7th, maybe the 8th century, there was a tradition of another Patrick, or a sort of a dual tradition of two Patricks. And the earliest reference we have, it's in an 8th century manuscript, but it's more likely from the 5th or early 6th century, a poem or a hymn from St. Fiach. And it talks about when Patrick died, he went with the other Patrick together into heaven with Jesus, son of Mary. Around the 8th or early 9th century, there's another text, the Martyrology of Talla, a famous monastery in Talla in County Dublin, that talks about old Patrick, beloved foster father or mentor of the younger Patrick. And it gives the August 24th as the commemorative date. And there's various other sort of annular descriptions of that mention, you know, the death of Patrick, the elder Patrick, in 457, 461. There's a bit of confusion. And there's others as well. There's even a letter from our own famous Columbanus writing to one of the popes, and he even makes reference to this in the early 7th century. So there's quite an amount of sources, but it's really the 7th, 8th century that we start to see the emergence of a singular tradition promoting this one individual who is, you know, sort of all things to all people, who single-handedly sort of, you know, pushes the snakes out of Ireland and converts Ireland and has magical powers and is sort of very much martial in his dealings with the old pagan traditions and so on. And that's pretty much comes from writers who wrote biographies of Patrick in Armagh. Armagh at a point in time wanted to set itself up as the primacy, the primus, the sort of the top church, if you will, across all of Ireland. So over the centuries since, Armagh and others began to kind of go with this one tradition and adding, and it was added to over the centuries as well, these different things that Patrick could do and so forth. You know, it gradually became more accepted that there was one Patrick and the other, okay, mysterious in a way, Patrick is sort of pushed to the sideline and so on. That's kind of it in a nutshell. Yeah.
And from those clues there, does it seem to imply that the older Patrick and the younger Patrick, they did know each other and one kind of acted as a mentor to the other?
It would suggest that. It would suggest that. Now, there's look, on the face of it, when you start looking at this issue, and many, many scholars before me have done this, it looks very straightforward. But when you start to look at it in a bit more detail, it gets much more complicated. And, you know, if you look at the different types of sources and as well as this, all of our written sources that we have today from that period, you know, this is prior to the printing press. So everything had to be copied by hand by scribes, typically in a monastic setting. So, you know, every generation or so, these texts would be copied and recopied. And sometimes there's mistakes. Sometimes there's omissions. Sometimes there's a bit of an alteration happens, you know. So it may well be that over time the two different stories become conflated, you know. And that's kind of part of it, but it looks fairly straightforward, but once you start to pull it apart and see, I mean, if you think of it, the earliest copy of the writings of the, say, let's just say the official Patrick with the 17th of March as his date, the earliest extant copy of that we have is from about the 9th century, at the height of the Viking sort of menace in Ireland and so on. So it's that's hundreds of years after Patrick himself, you know. So sometimes these primary sources are, they're not really contemporary, but we still call them primary sources, you know.
Yeah, I suppose the best that we have. Were they definitely, were assuming that there were two men, were they definitely both called Patrick?
That's the million-dollar question, because so different scholars have looked at this and from different points of view, from historical, from sort of linguistic and so forth, and language. But I might preface this by saying that a Patrick, what we call Patrick today, or Paddy, you know, where it comes from, Patricius. The term Patricius, while it could be a personal name in the Roman Empire, there's a few people mentioned with this name. Generally, it by the time we think of our Patrick in the 5th century, a Patricius was a very, very senior official position in the Roman administration. Could be military, or it could be political, or it could be both, you know. So it's, I think there's something interesting in that you have this individual who, or individuals rather, who turn up, who are either calling themselves Patrick or are given this name, this title Patrick, you know, because it's a feature still of a clerics, you know, taking on a name. You know, I had cousins who were called Mercedes and Rosario, but that wasn't their original name, you know, so there were nuns. So I think it may well be that this name, Patricius, is something that was taken on board as a name of a powerful name, you know. Mm-hmm. The Irish were well aware for centuries there had been trade and interaction between Ireland and the Roman Empire, Roman Britain, and much further afield. There's evidence for even Irish warriors, if you will, fighting in the Roman army as federate soldiers, you know. So there's all kinds of, there's knowledge of the outside world in Ireland. And I think if you have this individual or individuals who have this very powerful name that would have had resonance, at least within the political establishment in various different sort of Irish kingdoms or Thula and so on, you know. So I think, you know, to back to your question, sorry. There is an individual called Palladius who is absolutely categorically accounted for in the documentary record, in the historical record, as being sent by the Pope in Rome in the year 431 to as bishop to the Irish believing in Christ. And that's been a long bugbear of scholars and so forth over the centuries. Who were the Irish believing in Christ in 431? If, you know, our Patrick, 17th March Patrick comes in 432. So who are these Christians and so on? So it seems fairly obvious there were Christians in Ireland long before anyone called Patrick arrived. Yeah. But this individual Palladius was sent here, and you know, we have an outside source from the continent, Prosper of Aquitaine in southwestern France, and he points to this and he says it was, you know, he was very clearly, and it was not, it's not uncommon at this point to have papal missions outside into the so-called barbarian world of which Ireland was a part of, you know, as a way, even while the Roman Empire is collapsing and disintegrating in the West.
Yeah, you know? That's intriguing stuff. Yeah. I'm afraid, Chris, we have to leave it there, but thank you so much for your time today. That was Dr. Chris Doyle, lecturer in medieval history at the University of Galway.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.